No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which hopes to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I hope my show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. Happy New Year. This is a very important political year, and so I thought I would start out the year with a special guest, Patrick Mara, who, let me tell you a little bit about Patrick. He's a consultant specializing in political campaigns, advocacy, and small business development. He was previously the executive director of the District of Columbia Republican Committee. He was the first Republican ever elected to the State Board of Education in Washington, D.C., and he now sits on the Board of Latin Public Charter School, he's a member of the Board of Governors, and it's one of the most successful public schools in Washington, D.C. I even have friends that teach there. So welcome, Patrick. Thanks for being back on the show.
Thanks for having me, Senator. And I should mention, too, that I'm also the chairman. I'm the current chairman of the D.C. Republican Party.
Oh, you are the current chairman of the D.C. Republican Party. And I forgot to mention that, and I'm sorry.
That's really
important. And more important than that, you were kind enough to invite me to the last Republican National Convention. Well, not the last one, the one before that. And, you know, I've been to 11 consecutive Democratic National Conventions, but it was the first Republican convention I went to. And I got to tell you, you guys are way more orderly. We're not nearly as orderly, you know. You guys are orderly, and you put on a better show. We have a bowl of potato chips and a six pack of beer. That's an event for us, you know. But some of the events at the Republican convention were really, really amazing. So anyway, here we are in 2024, Patrick. Let's talk about what's the health and status of the Republican Party these days in the District of Columbia?
Sure, we are. Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't say the health is strong. Obviously, as you know, we have our challenges here in the district as Republicans. We are in the minority. We make up a smaller percentage of voters in the District of Columbia. We have had our successes over the years. And the interesting thing about the D.C. Republican Party, you know, we've been around since the 1850s. So yeah. we're considered a state party at the RNC. There's 50 state parties, 50 states, obviously, the territories and D.C. And each of those places, states, territories, and D.C. send 3 RNC members. So I'm one of the RNC members. There's 168 total. And more uniquely, you know, D.C. has 19 delegates and 16 alternates. And remember that the numbers here are a little bit different than on the Democrat side, where there are higher, you know, much larger numbers of delegates across the board. But we said, you know, we said 19 delegates, and, you know, that's as many as Rhode Island and Hawaii, more than Vermont, Delaware, more than all the territories except for Puerto Rico. But we're in striking distance of places like New Hampshire. And this particular cycle, we have moved our primary way up to March 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. So we're doing another kind of standalone primary. We're forced to do our own primary because where we were cited here in the district primary is June 4th. which puts us within 45 days of the Republican National Convention, which we can't do. I know a little bit boring to people, but anyhow, we moved it up. And so we will be the fifth primary in the nation. And so what's unique there is that we will be also be ahead of Super Tuesday. So the D.C. Republican Party in presidential politics has never been more relevant than it is here now in 2024.
And what is your sense? Now, is this a caucus type of primary? Explain it to me. Why does it cover 3 days?
So we're covering 3 days because in 2016, the last time we did this, we were after Super Tuesday. I said this cycle, well, heck, if we have to move up, why don't we just move as far up as we possibly can? The issue in 16 is when you have to pay for your own primary, because we can't, you know, obviously the city does not pay for parties to do their own primaries. In 16, we were only on Saturday. The issue there is that, you know, for observant Jews, that was not convenient. And then also we heard from other people that, you know, look, we need more time to vote just because it's, you know, we are unable to do a structured absentee ballot campaign. And so that's why it will be over 3 days. We'll announce the results on Sunday night. I mean, last time we did the similar type of event, we had national coverage from CNN and Fox and MSNBC and, you know, name your favorite media publication. They were typically there all day, or at least we were covered the next day in their print editions, which is less of a thing, 8 years later. We anticipate a pretty good turnout. The interesting thing is we're extremely relevant to anyone running for president, especially if you're someone who may be not be in first place, at least in the polls, in terms of the delegate count. So we have eight candidates who have made the ballot in D.C. Governor Doug Burgum has withdrawn. So we have seven candidates, and we're looking for a big opportunity for D.C. Republicans to have their voices heard and to weigh in on the presidential nominating process.
How do you feel it's going? We've got a Republican debate, I believe it's on Wednesday night. I assume that the former president will not be involved. But how do you think it's going for Republicans that are running for president? Does Nikki Haley have a shot? She seems to be moving up slowly on DeSantis. And how important do you think Iowa is to all this process for the Republicans?
Yeah, there's the issue with this cycle is we're in, at least in modern times, we're in uncharted territory in that we have a former president running for president. And, you know, so I guess not since, I could be wrong here in my history, but not since, Grover Cleveland have we had that?
I got to
fact check myself, but yeah, cause you go back a little bit further and you got Theodore Roosevelt, but, you know, this is, uncharted territory, obviously in this, modern age with media, with these primaries. I think in this particular cycle, I think Iowa is a little bit more relevant, primarily because because the former president did not participate in the debates, this is kind of the first literally scientific measurement that's not a poll of this race. And then obviously, as we go along, if you look at the candidates who are still in, New Hampshire, I mean, there's some other races in there, but I would say Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina will be the big ones, and then we're right after that in D.C. So, obviously Haley, you would think, would have to do fairly well in South Carolina. DeSantis has to do something in New Hampshire. Haley has to do probably better than she's doing now, and it looks like she's in second place according to the polls. But you know, in New Hampshire, because of the role of independents, that's going to play a factor. But then also because I believe there's a write-in campaign for President Biden. Is that correct? And that could also have an impact on those independent voters. I just don't know right now. But yes, I think Iowa does matter this cycle, but I'd say those other, you know, those other two matter as well.
Well, and what's the feeling? Do you have any feeling in Washington among Republicans right now who the leader is? I assume it's not Donald Trump, because we're the Republican Party of the District of Columbia tends to be pretty liberal as Republican parties go, does it not?
Well, what I would say there is that, you know, what I hear, the people I hear the most of who are not President Trump right at this point in time are really no surprise are Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis, maybe a little bit Chris Christie. But to be honest, this universe is fairly savvy, and it's unique in that savvy. It's like Ron DeSantis drops out in some place, because the names are still going to be on the ballot. So it's not like, you know, these people are going to be very calculated in how they vote. In 2016, we were after Super Tuesday and had to do this similar type situation where we, you know, had to vote in one location. And, you know, 10 of our delegates went to Marco Rubio and 9 of our delegates went to John Kasich. So, and that was probably a more of a calculated vote, because I doubt a lot of those people were, you know, that was their person. You know, in this cycle, you had a lot of people, it seemed, in D.C. out early for Ron DeSantis. I don't know where that is now, because I don't know how polling is, but certainly a lot of people were out early for Ron DeSantis. Haley had her admirers, and I'd say the unique thing about Donald Trump is that there are people in D.C. who were Schedule C's in the administration, or people who want to be Schedule C's in the next administration. So that could also play a factor. That certainly was not a factor in 16, just because in 16, nobody really, there wasn't really a belief that he was going to win. Whereas this cycle, you know, probably even among your listeners, I'm assuming a little more left leaning, there is a belief that he could win. So that is what makes him more unique in this cycle, in that these, you know, there are people who did work in an administration. There are people gunning to work in a future administration.
Well, that's true. I don't know. I had friends across the country, people in places like Arizona, that were telling me he could win. But certainly in Washington, D.C., in 2016, we didn't think that Donald Trump had a chance.
No, 999 out of 100 would have told you he's not going to win, and then we would all would have thought that other person was kind of dumb, as it turns out they were not.
and that's the one thing I say is the upside for me is that now none of the people in my family ask my political opinion, because that was me, right? I said, oh, nobody's going to vote for this guy. Come on, nobody. I think I even said at one time, I could beat this guy. Come on, you know. But obviously, I was way wrong. And I think we're all, you know, we all understand that he could certainly win. And the country is so divided right now. I've never seen it like this, Patrick. You know, and I'm a little older than you are. I grew up in the 1960s. 1968 was a horrible political year in America. A lot of division, certainly as a young person. We were all against the war in Vietnam, and there were all sorts of civil rights things going on, and we were really divided. But I think we're even more divided today than we've ever been. So
yeah,
you've been in politics a long time. What do we need to do to get over the divide, do you think?
Sure. Well, I think the big thing today that did not exist over the last 40 or so years, you know, up until the last five or so years, is that, you know, we're all not going home every night and watching Walter Cronkite. We're all not going home every night reading that one. We're all reading our own pieces of media. And so as chairman, it's funny, as chairman of the D.C. Republican Party, right, I read all sorts of media because right. most of the people I engage with on a daily basis are Democrats. And one thing I learned fast is that if I do not understand this person's perspective, I will just have no idea what is going on. And so I would say one of the things that we really don't think, you know, we think about it in kind of the grand terms of like that person watches Fox News or that person watches MSNBC. But with the internet, with, you know, even podcasts, you know, I have a close friend, you know, he's fairly progressive. And I said, I asked him, you know, what political podcast do you listen to? And he named these three podcasts. I had no idea what they were. And I said, well, what podcasts are those? He said, well, they're all anti-Trump podcasts, right?
And so, well, that's why Shadow Politics didn't make the list, I guess.
Yeah, well, I don't want to name any of them. But so the thing is that on the, if I ask the equivalent person on the right, what do you listen to? And then that person could be listening to three Joe Biden podcasts.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the big issues we have now, and I do not know how we rectify this, is that everybody is kind of going into their own silo and only consuming information that's being spoon-fed from that universe. And look, sometimes either one of those sides could have the right answer, but the other side won't know about it. You know, and these people will look at them like they have 10 heads. You know, if you go on cable news right now and flip between, one of the things I can't watch cable news anymore because we have young kids and my wife won't let me put it on. But when you flip between the channels, it's like these alternate, these kind of three among the three big ones, these three alternate realities. Well, in the conservative world and in the progressive world, you now have all these other alternative stations as well. So people are really just kind of spoon feeding themselves, you know, their choice of news. And so I think that is a big part of the problem.
Well, you know, and I've got to tell you, I say to my wife sometimes watching CNN, I'd like to see somebody delivering the news that's, you know, not in their 20s anymore. You know, we have so many young people. And so that's a thing for me too. And I think that you're absolutely right. I don't think that people go out in search of information. I'm married to a librarian, so she's always in search of information. But, you know, I think people look for things that support what they already believe. And I don't care how crazy-ass your idea is, you can find somebody on the internet that agrees with you. You know, whatever you believe, you know, there's somebody out there that will verify it and make you feel comfortable with your prejudices. It's really, really a tough thing. Well, let me ask you, recently, you know, we've had a lot of problems in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
High crime. I was criticized for criticizing the city council for sending a bill to Congress, to a conservative Congress, to reduce the mandatory sentencing on carjacking and murder when carjackings and murders are off the charts here in Washington. I mean, there were many arguments that, it really wasn't making a big change in the code, but just the optics of it, just to say, yeah, we're going to reduce these sentences when these crimes are going up and up and up, it seemed to me to be ridiculous. And I've been, and exactly as you say, because I went against what was considered the mainstream, you know, the people have vilified me for this. Like, how dare you? How dare you tell the truth? You know, it's crazy.
No, I saw it. It is crazy.
But anyway, yesterday, Colby King, who I consider middle of the road at best. I mean, you might not call him conservative. He's a liberal, but he's certainly middle of the road when it comes to government, wrote in his weekly column, "Can today's D.C. leaders govern this city?" What do you think? Do you think today's Do you see leaders who've gone too far?
Yeah, and so that's it, right? When someone like Colby King is writing that, you know things are not good. And that's before, you know, obviously you and I, if you and I went on a long vacation, we came back and read that column after a year away, we'd be like, uh-oh, something's not right here. Now, the difference is that you and I have been living here for the last several years. I would say, you know, I'm fairly tied into Congress these days, at least with either members or staff, and sometimes both, around public safety. When you would have a conversation with a member of Congress, a senator, a staff person, and I got to be honest, it wouldn't matter which side of the aisle. Now, admittedly, I really only spoke to Republican members, Republican senators, but then I talked to staff, both the Republican and the Democratic side. I could bring any issue up, and they would force the conversation over to public safety. And that's Republicans and Democrats. We have a big problem. We have a crime crisis. I think, you know, part of the issue here is that the council really dug its heels in. Someone as recently as last week referenced, you know, Chairman Phil Mendelson's remarks to Congress, to the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, that we do not have a crime crisis. And so we just have really dug our heels in on this. And look, the mayor, right, I should be arguing with the mayor over some tax or something, you know, but to her credit, you know, she didn't sign on to one or two of these things. She vetoed another. The council has just gone too far. And I think this is the problem with one party rule. You just have no diversity of opinion or thought. And when you talk to regular folks out there, regardless of their affiliation, and look, I've got two little kids. I'm at a public school. I'm at a charter school. I'm on the Hill all the time. I'm at Cub Scouts. I'm at soccer. I'm at baseball. Parents will ask about public safety, you know, and they might say to me, hey, I'm not a Republican, but I have a question. But, you know, so this is I don't think the council even still understands what an issue this is, even though it's now been just broadcast everywhere. And now you have people like Colby King asking the question if, you know, we can continue to govern ourselves. It's a huge problem. Now, on the bright side, your average House member did not read that column, but your average district resident who reads the Post did. So it definitely is meaningful. And that's, you know, when we talk about any other issues in D.C., we haven't even begun to talk about the slump. You know, we call it the summer slump when kids come back to school. But in education, the COVID slump, how far behind kids may be still from COVID. You know, they dug a little bit into like how bad the truancy issue is, but you know, they, you know, one of these things comes up and the next thing, you know, five other people get carjacked, somebody gets murdered, and see, none of this stuff is targeted I shouldn't say that, but a lot of this stuff is not targeted anymore. A lot of these crimes used to be targeted, but now, you know, everywhere you go, everyone you interact with knows somebody who has been impacted by a crime, if not themselves, in the District of Columbia over the last 2 years. And it's just not, you just don't feel safe. That's the other issue. And it's not, look, I live in Ward 7, and I may feel safer in Ward 7 now than when I'm walking around Capitol Hill at 6 o'clock at night. It's really gotten quite crazy.
Yeah, and you've got it out here. You know, I live in Ward 3. So you just had a murder at the intersection of Military Road and Western Avenue. I live on Western Avenue. You know, you've had another murder on Connecticut Avenue right down the street from where we are. Certainly we've had carjackings. And, it's just so widespread over the district that there is this feeling everywhere that you're not safe anywhere. And you're right. There were areas of town where you never quite felt safe. I used to live on Capitol Hill in one of the more emerging neighborhoods, and I lived on Thomas Circle. But now you feel it all over. You know, I was thrilled to read in the Washington Post that the most carjacked car in the district is a Dodge Charger. Of course, I drive a Dodge Charger. So, you know, I've been ready to bail. You know, I've even thought about I should practice jumping out of the car and saying,
yeah,
are on the, you know, crazy. We've got 14-year-olds murdering 14-year-olds on the street, Patrick.
Yep.
And we have the council passing legislation against shoplifting. Am I crazy? Or, I mean, I used to work in retail, so I'm not for shoplifting. But don't we have bigger fish to fry here than people stealing stuff off shelves and decriminalizing the sale of stolen merchandise? Don't we have bigger fish to fry?
Yeah, but when you think about it, I mean, normally, if you had said to either one of us a year ago that we'd be almost a half hour of this conversation, you've not referenced voting rights or statehood or anything
right.
like that, I would have definitely bet against that.
Yeah.
I would have put all my assets on betting. No, he'll mention it probably in the first 8 minutes. The fact that public safety, it just permeates everything now. You can't have a normal discussion about everything else because this is the issue. My wife, you know, we have to have a car to get the kids to school. Mm-hmm. And so she'll, you know, we've had long conversations about what do you do if you're carjacked? You know, if the car stopped, she'll go around another block because you don't know if it sounds terrible. You don't know if that's a carjack or somebody trying to cause trouble. It's a huge issue. And these are the things people are thinking about nowadays. What do I do? Do I, you know, gun the car and speed backwards? Everyone has had thoughts about this.
And we're giving away these air thingies where you can look, where you can find the car after it's been stolen. I mean, is that really the right approach? you know?
I don't mean to laugh, but
I mean, it's crazy. And that's certainly, that's the bottom level of Maslow's pyramid of hierarchy of needs, right? You have to feel safe. You have to feel safe before anything else. Safety is the bottom rung of the ladder. So
Have members of Congress, right? When you have a member of Congress mugged in an apartment, we have a member
and then
of
another
Congress
one carjacked. Yeah.
Yes, but then you go out to that, you expand the circle out to staff. It's like what staff got mugged? What staff got robbed?
Yeah.
Now expand the circle
or
out
killed.
To tourists.
There was even a DNC staffer murdered. Yeah,
that's right. I mean, and we should be advocating for D.C. and not having to talk about public safety all the time. But we have to talk about public safety all the time because it's the biggest problem. And it's the largest, when you look at polling or anything, it's the largest concern of D.C. residents. Normally, if you know, again, 5 years ago, I said, what's the biggest concern? You would say, oh, it's probably education. But what is it? It's public safety. If you had said to me 5 years ago, the biggest concern of most DC residents is public safety, I would have said, I don't understand. What are you talking about? But we're back to 1997. That's the problem.
Well, and you know what? As somebody that did PR for the Democrats for 25 years, I would just be salivating at this if I was a Republican that was in charge of giving PR advice during an election year, that you have a city that's entirely run by Democrats where crime is off the hook. And, you know, I'd be saying, let's use this. But let me ask you, as chairman of the Republican Party, and as my friend Carol Schwartz is the last Republican that I remember in D.C., does this give you an opportunity? Can you get some Republicans elected? You think citywide in 2024? There are several council races up.
Well, I'm never going to say no. We're always going to do the best that we can to put people forward. Certainly, the public safety issue is a big issue. Part of what we need to do always is identify the right people to run. One of the issues we have, you know, not always, and look, the same thing happens on the Democratic side. The person may not be, may be thinking this is something that it's not and doesn't understand the issues universe and that type of thing. But certainly it's never been riper for a Republican to win.
Right.
But you know, you gotta, there's a lot of things that need to happen. It's always a little bit tougher in the presidential cycle. We could have, I mean, you just don't know. There could be some recalls of council members. And so the replacement elections could be special elections, which frankly, that does typically make it a little bit easier for a Republican to win. You know, David Catania was first elected in a special election to a at-large seat. I mean, obviously, uh-huh. That was a different, you know, that was in the 90s. It was a different time in the 90s. But nonetheless, the math looks different. And so, you know, you have to analyze these things from ward to ward. You know, is it citywide? And then obviously the other issue we run into is that people will sometimes just declare without any conversation. And so we'll see. We're gonna do the best that we can. But certainly in this environment, it's never been riper. I mean, you look back through time and it's like literally you'd have to go back to the 1980s to find a more ripe environment than this.
Well, you know, we have a guest who's written in who said she wonders if there's any chance of increasing the number of Republicans in the District of Columbia. What do you think about that? She said, what gives the Republican Party any threat of hope of increase in the GOP numbers in the district? Is there any hope that you'll increase your numbers in the district?
Well,
I mean, I'm sure there's always hope, but
yeah,
are there any indication?
I mean, I'm the chairman of the D.C. Republican Party. So
right, I know,
hope.
I know.
But what I'd say here is that, look, we have to fix this public safety issue. I mean, certainly Republicans are not going to come in droves to live in the District of Columbia, but for that matter, people in general aren't going to continue to live in the District of Columbia if this public safety issue isn't solved.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at, you know, because I believe, you know, and again, these are stats that people have just started to throw around. So please fact check me. But I saw somewhere that we had dipped below 700,000 people. I don't know if that's correct or not. But if that's the case, that's a problem. That's a big problem. I also know that they just cleaned up the voter rolls again. This is something we've been advocating for a while. So the numbers, I have not seen the new numbers. The Board of Elections website is a little bit up in the air at the moment. It's hard to, it's always been a little difficult to navigate, but there's something going on there now. It's much harder to see the numbers. I mean, certainly the best we can do is to keep fighting to run good candidates and run solid campaigns, and hopefully it turns out for the best.
Well, and you know what? I wonder how much voter turnout's going to be affected because we pretty much know in the primary. And the primary is the only election that really counts in the district, is it not? And we already know who the candidates are going to be pretty much. Ultimately, who the candidates are going to be.
The other big thing that would kind of change things up is if we... And this would take a home rule charter revision. But most, 75% of cities in the country actually elect people either local races through nonpartisan elections. So Chicago, Boston, I believe L.A., but then just a lot of other, you know, cities similar size to D.C. do it in nonpartisan elections. If D.C. had nonpartisan elections, you'd have you wouldn't have like this groundswell of Republicans elected to the DC council, but you'd probably have a couple more Republicans. And then at the same time, particularly if you look at something like this public safety issue, you'd have a little bit more diversity of thought on the Democrat side if you were to pivot to a nonpartisan system of elections.
Well, you know that I'm not necessarily in favor of that, but I've got to tell you that I do recognize that not having any Republican elected officials in the District of Columbia is one of the obstacles we face in our challenge for statehood, because
yes.
it's about equality and justice. But on Capitol Hill, it's about two more Democrats in the United States Senate in perpetuity, and that's what it's always been about. If you look at the fight for the Dakotas, for example, or mm-hmm. New Mexico, or you can go back to the Missouri Plan, slave state, mm-hmm. non-slave state. It's always mm-hmm. been about a balance of power in Congress, and the fact that we're not balanced as far as that goes, has been a problem for us. And look, Patrick, now, as some lovely Republican congressman pointed out, I think it was Jim Jones, that you can work for the Russian embassy and now run for mayor in the District of Columbia. What do you think of that idea? You know, they passed a law that yes. you don't have to be documented to vote in local elections.
Yeah, so this is the other thing, is they just went too far on a number. I mean, obviously on some public safety issues, but with the non-citizen voting, the issue there is that you just have to live in D.C. for 30 days, and that the documentation is absolutely minimal. So the problem is, it's because I know, because I've actually spoken to Tom Cotton, Ted Cruz. I talked to the head of the House Administration Committee about it. It is an issue for D.C. just because if you, in terms of the, especially in terms of the optics, but when you can have, obviously there's not a big groundswell of Chinese embassy and Russian embassy people voting, right. but when it's a possibility, the problem is, and because there's one member of Congress who is in a well-placed committee suggested to me, this is a way to kind of title wash who you are for espionage purposes, like if you're voting. And it just makes it so easy to vote. So even if that person's not necessarily voting as a non-citizen, we just do not have a lot of the protections in place to ensure this person is actually allowed to vote in D.C. And we just made it really, really easy for literally anyone in the world to vote in D.C. And as people who are second, third class citizens, because we don't have representation in Congress, it's a little bit strange because we're actually kind of watering down our vote even more by allowing anyone in the world to vote in D.C. I mean, the other weird thing is, I mean, literally you could come here as a summer intern and you can vote in a special election in D.C. and be gone, right? Yeah. I mean, it's really,
well, and for
really bad.
And for a guy like me who spends a lot of time on Capitol Hill saying that you need to give us the rights of citizenship, it's kind of, it undercuts what I do, too, to say, well, you no longer have to be a citizen in the District of Columbia. You know, I signed up for the draft when I was 18 years old in the middle of a war. So I feel like, people that have been in the country 30 days shouldn't have the right to vote. I think, you know, it's a right of citizenship.
Yeah.
What are our rights?
I mean, I understand. Look, I'm a D.C. resident. I've been elected to the Board of Ed. I'm no stranger. I understand the mindset of the more progressive wing in D.C. of the Democratic Party, which is something that's more progressive than outside, more outside D.C. But I think the issue here for us is the public safety issue and the non-citizen voting issue are really the one-two punch on the Hill to try to achieve just about anything else.
Yeah.
And it's really unfortunate. I mean, this is probably the first year in, since I first got involved where I haven't had conversations about, my standard stump speech up on the Hill about, second class citizens and we're Democrats, but we should have the same rights. Right. And I haven't had any of that because basically I'm talking about public safety and non-citizen voting all the time. And again, I don't think the D.C. Council understands how bad this is for the district, not only today, but even 5, maybe even 10 years from now.
Well, and you know that you're talking to Republicans, but I'm talking to Democrats. There's 5 Democrats and independents who aren't on the bill, and I've talked with every one of them. And lately, We've had meetings in Senate offices with Democrats, and they're talking about crime. You know, this is when they're talking about crime in D.C. So it's not just the Republicans. It's it's both sides. And it's a real problem for us. So I'm going to give you an opportunity here. Do you want to announce your candidacy for something on the because I think you'd make a good Republican candidate.
Well, if I announce my candidacy, then my wife will also announce our divorce probably.
I know that feeling.
We have young kids, and so it's a combination. We have young kids, and look, I was elected to the Board of Ed for 4 years, and I've run for DC Council, so I know I not only know what it takes to run, but I also know what it takes once you're elected to be an active, engaged elected official. And I saw you out there all the time, you know, forums that I was at, and especially in Ward 1 when I was not running but representing the ward, you know, I was at, you know, 2 to 3 nights a week, I was presenting at some place in the ward. And so this is, I could not afford the time right now. Certainly maybe when the kids are older, I'll declare my candidacy for mayor.
Well, you know, and I got to tell you, my wife has said a campaign or two ago, she goes, I'm not hanging up any more signs. I'm not hanging up, I'm not going out there and hanging up any more signs. So I get it. It's tough on your family. And, you know, when people write things, you know, it's funny when people write things about you in the press that aren't true or that are bad. Your family takes it harder than you. And I used to say to my wife, she would say, how can you allow this? And I would say, you know, she's a big basketball fan. And I would say it's not nice and it's illegal to throw your elbows in a basketball game. But if you can't take an elbow, you can't play in the NBA. You've got to be able to take an elbow to be in politics. But yeah, it's really hard on the people around you. Well, let's talk. This is one of the, I'm not running for re-election, and you know, statehood for the District of Columbia is going to happen. It's inevitable. It's not going to happen in the next couple of years, I can tell you, unfortunately. And as you are the spokesman for the Republicans and always have hope, I'm a spokesman for statehood, and I have hope too. And I have a year left on my term, and I will work very, very hard to increase our progress. We've gotten statehood through the House twice now, and we'll continue to build on that progress. But we still have a ways to go, and all the stuff that we've talked about tonight, especially public safety, are standing in our way right now. It's going to be, we've got some heavy lifting in front of us. Not that I, and you know, shy away from that, but we do. We have some very heavy lifting that we have to do, and we all have to work together and pull together to make this happen. But let's change gears right now, since you sit on the Board of Governors of Latin, where I do have friends that teach there. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Senator, I'm sorry. That's my bad. I was on the board for 7 years. I'm currently not on the board.
Oh, okay.
I apologize for not. I was on the board for 7 years up until about 6 to 9 months ago, I think it was.
Okay, so given your experience on education, we have, you know, look, I am the one of the champions of absenteeism in school. My junior year of high school, I missed over 100 days of high school.
Oh, wow.
I skipped over 100 days. So I understand what a horrible problem this is. What are we doing to mitigate that? Because when I was first elected at Anacostia High School, 51% of the kids did not finish on time, which just blew me away. It blew me away that on the first day of school, the principal might say, you've got more of a chance of not finishing than you've got of finishing. It's just crazy. So what are we doing to mitigate that? Is that going down? And what steps do we need to take in the future?
Sure. Well, based on recent reports, particularly at more economically disadvantaged schools, it seems to be a larger problem than it's ever been before. Now, a lot of this, some of it is factual, but, you know, you can't just keep blaming everything on COVID for the next 20 years. And so I think, you know, we do need to take a more forceful approach to truancy. I am not in the trenches as I once was, but you need an effective universe of truant officers. You need effective support at specific schools. So, for example, my youngest is at a D.C. public school, but it's among the highest, among the highest performing. Sometimes it is the highest performing just based on the scores. We, you know, obviously take everyone can take those with a grain of salt. But in the District of Columbia, so does his school need truant officer? No, probably not. Do all, elementary schools with disadvantaged kids? No, that's a different thing, right? That's, you got to get through to the, you know, that's getting through to the parents in a different way. But certainly at the middle school and high school level, at specific schools, we just need to do a much better job of really taking on truancy head on. And we seem to not be doing that now. But again, I'm just reading news reports these days. The other thing I'd say is that, you know, one of the big advantages that we do have in the district is that with, this may be less popular to the audience, but with parental choice in education, you know, every kid is not going to their neighborhood school anymore, which has made a difference for a number of kids. It's also kept people in the city who historically may have moved out of the district. The other thing I'd say, Mayor Gray had implemented, pre-K 3, pre-K 4, also mm-hmm. a huge, huge difference. And I think at time that will also make a difference. In my own family, I have familiarity with it, but certainly having been on the Board of Ed in Ward 1 with the highest concentration of ELL, English Language Learner students, you could definitely see the benefits of that there. Parental choice in education, if a school is, truly underperforming, you gotta practically, it's almost like the Powell Doctrine. You gotta send in the resources. And so this is one of the challenges that DCPS has as an LEA. It seems like they can't always just focus in one kind of area. But certainly some of these more disadvantaged schools where truancy seems to be a big problem, we really got to focus on it head on. And it's obviously it also has to be more of a community approach. You need to engage the police in efforts. Speaking of which, we need to bring back neighborhood policing. We also need more police officers. I don't think I mentioned that yet. But it's this, not to sound like I remember the DC council, talking to some reporter, but while we definitely do need a comprehensive approach to truancy, and at some point too, police officers are probably involved in that effort.
Well, it's hard for me to imagine, given that, I grew up in this area. If I mm-hmm. wanted to be a police officer and my choices were to be a police officer in Montgomery County or in Fairfax County or in Washington, D.C., I mean, it seems to me it'd be a tough choice, right? Because we have real crime, and not that they don't have crime in Montgomery County, but they have a lot less of the type of violent crime and things that we have in the district. I would think that, we really have to try hard. And we've had the head of the police union on, we've had the chief, mm-hmm. two chiefs of police on the podcast, and we've asked the latest, I've met with the new police chief, and she's going to be on the show, I believe. Recruiting police officers is, and again, has the council not made that harder? Have they not made that harder right now we have the mayor trying to roll back some of the things that the council has passed in the past mm-hmm. Few years that inhibit the police. This is a real problem.
I joked to the head of the police. I joked to Greg Pemberton, the head of the police union. Historically, I don't think I can remember a time when the head of the police union was not fighting with the mayor and the police chief
right.
20 around the clock. It, basically, the council's gone so far over that he can't even, he doesn't even know the mayor and the chief exists. I mean, obviously he does, but the focus is the council because they've just gone so far over. And it's the stuff that it's, you know, it's the stuff that sounds good, and they just really took it to whole, a whole new level, and it has certainly not benefited the city, and it's hurting us up on the hill, and it it will probably have an impact on us for a while.
And you know, I grew up, I was not poor because poverty is a kind of a cyclical, almost a disease-like thing, but I was always broke. And I knew people that were, you know, I knew people that did things that were outside the law. They're very smart. They're very tuned into what's going on every moment. And the more we allow this to fester, the worse it's going to get. So,
well, and one thing I will say in Ward 7, you would see during COVID, you know, I had to alternate with my wife. To be home with the kids for the, their home schooling. And you would see large groups of kids congregating in seven. Large, large groups. And so I think this is, to a certain extent, this is still something, while it is left over from COVID, these large groups are allowed to just kind of hang out during the school day. And it was just tacked up as, oh, it's, you know, it's COVID. They're, you know, they're out today or they're not logging in. And, you know, in some cases, kids would just log in and count as present. And that's fine if, you know, it's COVID. And so I think we just, we really have to attack the truancy issue much more than we are now. But again, and it does, it probably, especially when you look at carjacking, it, it there's a relationship there. But obviously the first thing in everyone's mind right now is public safety and safe streets.
Yeah. Well, Patrick, we're running out of time here, so I want to ask you, as I ask most of my guests, is there anything you want to add? Is there something that I should have asked that I didn't ask, or something you want to add?
No, I would, you know, I'd just say, look, I really am disappointed you're not running again. You're always a forceful advocate for the District of Columbia. I would see you, you know, I would always, you're always everywhere. And you've kept that, you know, you've kept that up. You know, you just don't get elected and go away. You're just always out there. You're always engaging. You're always representing the citizens of the District of Columbia. And so, you know, thank you for that. And then the other thing I just say is if there is a Republican out there listing in D.C., don't forget our primary on March 1st, 2nd, and 3rd.
Yeah. Well, and let me tell you that I just need to take a rest. If I'm going to be the chairman of the Patrick Mara for Mayor campaign, I need time to rest up and recharge my battery. So,
well, you're gonna have to work out to like to fight off people attacking me too.
Well, I am. I'll be doing my calisthenics and getting you know, ready to roll. But I want to wish you a happy New Year, Patrick, to you and your family. I hope it's a prosperous and wonderful year for you. I know I'll run into you somewhere in the near future, and I look forward to that. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Aaron. I appreciate it.
Yep. We'll talk to you again soon. Every week we play a song, usually in honor of our guests. Tonight I've chosen a song to start the new year off. It's a favorite of mine. It's really about looking back in order to look forward. So here's Stones in the Road by Mary Chapin Carpenter. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you.